Hi, everybody. Welcome back to No Killing Goblins. Today is April 4th, I think. Yeah, April 4th. And we're recording this as a sort of emergency podcast because, unfortunately, we missed last week. And then there were some technical difficulties with our recordings and a computer blew up. That's all I got for you. A computer blew up. And unfortunately, we lost a bunch of episodes and we're scrambling to get everything recorded. And thankfully, a friend of mine, Dylan, you remember Dylan? Say hi, Dylan.
Hello, everybody. That's me.
Dylan agreed to come on and help me record an episode in the middle of the week instead of our usual weekend recording time. I do apologize for missing out on last week, but we will get back to schedule as soon as possible. And we will have those MR episodes eventually. We are trying to get that Mating Rituals 1 and 2 done.
Oh, God.
It was actually a fun discussion. We had a new guest, and Lynette came back. It was an interesting discussion, and according to Dragon, it's not as painful as he thought it would be.
That's good.
That's the best you can hope for, right?
Yep, those are some interesting chapters.
When we were talking about it, we started discussing things like disabilities and accessibility for people on the website and various other things. And we had a lot of conversation. We had a wide-ranging thing. Of course, Lynette made some very terrible jokes, which I wasn't allowed to put in the podcast because, yeah, what? She's a nice old lady. Yeah. It's so cruel, isn't it? Sometimes people reveal, like, you pretend to be a nice old lady who does knitting, and in the meantime, you're a terrible, lewd person, and I can't even shockingly reveal that.
The deepest secrets. Hidden from the podcast. Your poor listeners will never know. The dark side of the podcast.
So, Dylan, this is usually the part of the podcast where I go, like, with Dragnus, where I go, like, what? How was your week? How was your week?
Well, it's Monday, Oshi, so...
How was the weekend, then?
Oh, weekend was good. I don't know if I told you, I'm working on a different, like, game project that I'm trying to get with, working on networking right now. It's complicated, but it's going well.
Oh, good. That's great. For the audience out there, Dylan is training himself to be a game dev.
Yeah, essentially. Yeah, I'm trying to get into software engineering, but I really like doing game dev. And for whatever reason, I try to get into doing multiplayer and networking, which is honestly not the best idea because networking is hard. The internet is confusing, but it's what I like to do. So,
you know what you reminded me of for a second there? You know who we haven't seen in forever? Chameleon.
Cam.
He would know networking, wouldn't he?
Yeah, he would even know a bit more about it. I'll have to get in contact with him sometime.
Chameleon being an old guild member from our WoW guild days and a very good friend who lives in upstate New York and looks like the picture of what you would expect a white supremacist to look like, but is actually a professor at a liberal arts school. Come on! He's bald, he's got the beard, he does the... What did he do? The muscle move whenever he streams?
Yeah. I remember those pictures, especially with his Halloween ones, his costumes.
Have you heard from him recently?
No, I haven't talked to him in a hot minute.
Yeah. I mean, he's still around. He does the esports business, so of course
he's busy.
We hear about
busy, busy.
He has a kid, a wife, and a business. Not a business, what am I saying? An entire department to run. So mm-hmm. We grow older. Time passes. Things get busy. Speaking of busy for me, my weekend was interesting.
What'd you do?
On Friday, I watched a movie with a bunch of people over Discord.
Is it a movie I'm going to know?
It was Die Hard.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It was the original Die Hard. I haven't watched Die Hard in a long time. Because it used to be tradition to watch Die Hard movies. Well, not necessarily Die Hard. It could also be Sister Act. But it used to be tradition that I would watch one of the older movies when it was Christmas. I'm not Christian, so I don't celebrate Christmas. So I would go to the movies.
Open theaters, man. Everyone's busy celebrating stuff. You're hitting the movies.
I forgot just how much fun Bruce Willis's movie was, but also how tropey it is.
Yes. yes.
Like, you just, everything he does in that movie is so odd. Like, there's a scene where he literally punches pushes a guy's body through a window to fall on the ground, and Carl Winslow, the guy who played Carl Winslow, you remember him?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's in the movie and he's just getting shot at and he's bleeding. Just everything about that movie is so, I don't know. It hasn't aged. It has aged, but it hasn't aged badly. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I mean it's a classic.
What's your classic movies?
But like holidays or just in general?
In general, I mean, what is a classic movie for you? First off, the fact that an 80s movie is classic and I was born in the 80s.
Born in the 80s, loser.
Oh, fuck you, born in the 90s, weeb.
Hey, 93 was a good year. Classic movies, classic movies. You know, I'm not gonna be able to come up with something off the top of my head. Something will pop in like in a week, and I'll let you know.
A Home Alone?
I don't really like the Home Alone series. I find the main character extremely annoying. He's so obnoxious, and I can't stand it. Maybe because I have two sisters, but two little sisters.
You know what though? I did kind of what it, as I grew older, I started rooting for the robbers to kill him.
Just like look at the poor. Yeah, you know, once you're younger, it's kind of like yeah, but now you get older and you look at the what they're doing, and they're just like they make no sense, and then you're just like, man, they're getting like demolished. They must be in so much pain. Half the stuff that goes through, ugh.
Yeah, Macaulay Culkin, as he's gotten older, has just gotten a little bit more like chill. He's one of the few child stars that isn't batshit insane at this point is in life. Oof.
I don't follow too many actors, couldn't tell you.
What do you follow? Actually, do you follow? Did you see the Our Place stuff?
Oh yeah, dude, I've been having that open to just check on it every once in a while. Love to see how it changes.
I love it. Apparently they expanded the size. Trevor told me they expanded the size of Our Place. For
Yeah, it's gigantic.
those who are listening, if you aren't aware, Our Place is this anniversary thing that Reddit's done where people can place pixels to do art together as a group community thing. And literally, it's like a giant quilt but with pixels.
Yeah, no Kibbling Islands has a little thing on it.
Not our podcast. It was done by the group from the Wandering Inn server. They were trying to make Wandering Inn signs. It ended up being No Killing Goblins, and I was happy about it. Apparently, when you Google No Killing Goblins, we're the first ones to show up. Win free advertising.
Perfect.
And the best part of it is it's just above the Star Trek sign.
Yeah, I haven't looked at it again. I don't know if it's still there or anything like that. I haven't looked at it this morning.
Honestly, I haven't either. I'll probably have to check it out. So bring it back to TWI since we've
All
already
right.
talked about
All
it.
right.
We got a we got a couple of emails from last week. Our question was, what class would you choose? What would be what speaks to your soul as a class, not just like randomly what class you would pick. So we got two emails. One is from Kevin, and Kevin says, ever since chapter one, I've thought about this question. My answer relies almost entirely on where I find myself in Inworld. I'm not going to name the details in the thing because a lot of it's spoilery, but I will name the classes they pick. So he said for Southern Israel is pilot, Northern Israel is farmer, Tyrandria literally says the words, I'm out. Whatever class gets me off that island is what I
There.
choose. Chandrar is Golemist? I don't know what the fuck that is. Yeah, Rear slash Balaros is class doesn't matter, I'm probably dead within the month.
That's fair. That's smart. Got
That's
to plan.
smart.
Got to plan around that though. Get like a survivalist class or something like that. Go Bear Grylls.
The whole idea is you can't plan around it, right? You just get plopped in the middle of nowhere, which is the first. Let's be real. Every single fucking lit RPG tries to be like, you get to start your life over, but you get to cheat by making sure you have every tool you need to survive when you start out.
Yeah, I know. She that RPG's so good but so bad at the same time.
It's not bad. It's just a weird concept. The whole idea is you're starting your life over. You already cheat by having the experiences of your prior life. Why would you need to give them more stuff?
Because of the main characters, though, she obviously.
Oh, God. Giguk did the Shonen anime tier list, by the way.
I haven't seen that video.
I don't like you gotta see that video. It's every single shonen anime you can think of.
And they're all trash.
So that was Kevin's answer. Thank you so much for your email, Kevin. We appreciate it. And the second email we have is Ethan Tarr. And Ethan says, "Hey guys, if I was an in-world, I would want to be the get I the hey guys, if I was start over, okay. Hey guys, shut up. I have to... Hey guys, if I was an in-world, I would want to gain the class game developer. I already make games. I can't imagine how those would improve if I gained skills. Maybe some skills would be like sense enjoyment or crafting abilities. Possibly high-level skills would be able to make games out of events that are occurring or enforce rules to prevent cheaters. I do wonder what kind of class advancement or consolidation would lead to game developer, some kind of crafter or tinkerer, I would imagine. What do you guys think?"
That's funny that was the email for when I came on. Oh, man, that'd be kind of cool though. You know, Atomi game events or something like that. Just random planned events that you get sucked into. That'd be kind of cool. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like it would be some sort of a along the lines of that crafter tinker type thing.
I thought it would be like not mathematician, what is it, like painter or artist of some kind? And then you get like somehow you figure out how to be a programmer or something, and then those things combine. Because that's how I think of game devs. You guys are artists and programmers at the same time.
A bunch of you wear many hats, but I feel like it'd be focused on like gamifying type things. Not that in-world isn't already kind of gamified in itself, but you know, set like I don't know, like daily quests or something like that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I
You
get
could
what
have
you're...
like unlocks. I don't know what they would do, but I don't know. There'd be a lot of cool things you could do with it.
That's a good question, though. Is the wandering in gamified? Do you actually think it works under that theory? I mean, it doesn't feel gamified to me.
I mean, I guess it not necessarily too gamified, mainly because I don't really understand how you get levels. I mean, like I guess I do kind of understand how you get levels, but at the same time, there's no like set way to level up or anything like that. Because I mean, you have classes, you have skills, you can level them up. There's kind of a cap. There's no like daily quests and stuff like that. But I mean, you got adventurers and everything like that, right? Like that's all classic lit RPG game fantasy type stuff. So, and you get rewarded for what you're doing, not necessarily with the daily rewards, but towards level ups and stuff like that. Even if you don't have like a typical like fantasy RPG type class, right?
That's true, but when I think of gamify, I mean, other than thinking of it as a way to exploit people, because you know we do know that there is a sing the gacha games exist, but gamify, when I think about it, is applying game elements to your life to encourage people to engage with something, right? Usually, it's something like trying to get you to play a cell phone game so you'll buy a cell phone.
Kind of. I mean that's more just the straight like marketing or retention kind of thing. When I'm talking gamify, I mean like you're taking an already existing thing and adding like game elements to it, right? So it's like you can find like those to-do lists or daily like check-offs or something like that, and you know, you do something and check it off on your app and you get like experience, and like it encourages you to keep doing those things because you're getting experience like you would in a game. Same kind of thing happens with like there's like the what receptionist class and stuff like that, and just interacting and doing things for people levels you up there. So
This like is blowing my mind a little bit because I hadn't considered, but maybe that's how pirate based the world's structure on gamifying life, essentially finding those like every activity that we do adds a game element to it and then converts into classes and skills and then just breaks down as we
yeah.
get
See,
to.
it double dips, right? Because like you need to do stuff during the day, like take Erin and her in. Like she has to run it and maintain it and everything. But at the same time, she also gets skills and levels up that help either do those or expand upon what she wants to do. That kind of thing. So,
Speaking of Eren and gaining skills.
oh, that
Oh, thank you. It was good. It was good. I don't
segue.
usually get such good lead ups. So, 2.16 and 2.17 are the chapters we'll be covering today. And the first chapter, chapter 16 of volume 2, it starts off with the sentence, "She was a queen and he was not."
Oh, it's a love story.
No. The first the first scene of this chapter is our glimpse into the queen of the Free Antimnium and Kilbukich's place in the Hive itself. He's the newly reincarnated revelinator of Free Antimnium, which was technically above the rank of Propagator. Both titles being things we're kind of trying to understand. They don't really explain. Pirate doesn't really explain what the hell they are.
Yeah, but it sounded cool.
I had a discussion with Dragonus, and it came down to Dragonus thought that the class names were reflecting or like real world example, because Revelinator is based on a like religious themes. Prognugator, to prognugate is actually a word, prognugating.
I never looked it up, but that's kind of cool.
Dragonus looked it up and said prognugate is an actual action you can do. It's to preach or something, or lead. I don't know.
It makes sense for what they're doing. And a lot of those cool little things authors throw in, little asides, and then I never look at it. So poor authors lost on me.
Oh, you make me despair. I could never get you to read, like, I don't know, Into Darkness or something, could I?
I don't know what that is. Maybe you could. Who knows?
It's a very classic novel. Sorry, not Into Darkness. Why can't I remember that?
Into the Night?
No, I'm having a moment where I forget.
You're getting old, Oshi.
I'm getting old. All right.
Back to these titles here.
Anyway, so titles, and we find out about the listeners and all the ways that Kilbukich is sort of investing in Aaron Solstice and how he sort of communicates and works with that. Basically, info dumping the Hive, right?
Yeah, I loved this part though. The queen just cannot grasp the point of Aaron. Like she's just a human, and Kilbukich is just kind of like chuckling to himself, like, "Oh, queen, you don't understand. She needs windows."
It's gonna drive me insane if I can't find this novel, because I know this novel.
All right, you keep looking for it, Oshi. I believe in you.
It wasn't Into Darkness. It's Heart of Darkness.
Heart of Darkness. Oh, okay.
Yeah. So Heart of Darkness is a colonial era novel. It's considered one of the classics. It's all about a ferry boat captain in the interior of Africa. It's pretty cool. It's a little...
Is there magic and swords?
No.
Wow, you lost me, Oshi.
I knew it. You couldn't do it. there is a part that I spent way too much time talking to Dragonus about, but Kilbukich calls Queen Milady.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was interesting, and Dragonus thought I was overthinking it, but the reason I thought about it is because we do get introduced to classes that are...
Lord and Lady and all that other stuff.
Yeah, why the fuck does Kilbukich not have like a class that's Lord and Lady? If there's a queen, why can't there be Lord and Lady? Like, I don't know.
Maybe it has to do, I mean, actually I don't know how the classes do, but it could be like perception type of thing. Like, you know, they don't perceive to have that noble structure. There's a queen and then there's the other ones. But maybe if they perceive to have the queen and then, you know, lords and stuff like that, their classes would then come to reflect it.
I wonder if they even know about lords and ladies at this point.
Oh, they do. Come on. The Antinium are pretty well connected, right? Like,
yeah, that's true. They do know about others. We even find out about the listeners. Okay, the listeners are so depressing. Imagine being existing for a shorter lifespan just so your ears would be sensitive enough to let you listen in on other people's conversation. It does speak to the flexibility of how the Antinium manipulate biology. It also speaks to just how desperate the Antinium are to like create these kind of pitiful creatures to listen in on other people's times. It's sad. It's a hint at something deeper, right?
Yeah. Yep.
On to happier stuff. Aaron!
Yeah, woo!
Woo! We go back to Aaron's inn, and Aaron is super pissed off because, what, somebody revealed, like, they figured out that there's a giant city underneath Liscor, and it's the dungeon, and nobody knew about it.
Okay, so I needed to ask this question, because, like I said, I just read through this, but as far as timeline goes, this is clearly after the whole Ghazi thing, but Did they open the dungeon or they just find the dungeon?
I believe what happened is that they stumbled across an entrance, and then later on they found like a map detailing like a larger section.
I just needed to know. I should have asked this beforehand.
Yeah, no, it's cool. So that's what happened. And the tombs were, and they're labeled as tombs rather than an actual city, and the map or whatever information they found describes the various defenders, and apparently the Skinner was just like one of them.
Yeah.
It's terrifying. It doesn't mean that there'll be more visitors, which is what Erin is super happy about.
Mm-hmm.
But the first person that comes to her rebuilt after the explosion in is Pisces.
Yeah, and then he's like, I couldn't find this place.
He was thin, he's super weird about it, and then he reveals the fact that he made a spider.
In the most, like, I he just, like, look at the spider and, like, threw it out. He didn't say anything about it, and... of course everyone reacts, it's a freaking spider, they want to smash it or do something like that. He's like, no, it's my creation. You could have said that at the start. But he wouldn't be Pisces if he didn't, or if he did.
I pictured Pisces literally like a 10-year-old picking, like, he who found a frog out behind and is trying to show the parents, lifting it up and going, behold! I love this scene so much.
Yeah, but I mean, that's a pretty big, as far as, yeah, I mean, Pisces mentions it, how big of a step this is for necromancy or whatever, where it's not just working on bones and human remains.
I mean, it is a super cool thing, and if Erin knew a little bit more about science, I'd be super excited, because then she could, like, can you imagine what Pisces would have been able to do if he had a textbook?
I mean, if Erin just, like, I don't know, changed her thinking a little bit instead of freaking out or just completely disregarding things, a lot of things would change. But then she wouldn't be Erin if she did that, so.
And not only wouldn't she be Erin, it would be a lot less fun. I mean, can you imagine one of us?
She wouldn't be an Erin. She'd be a Ryoka. No, don't be like that.
Speaking of Ryoka, she does come back to the inn. I'm skipping over a bunch of stuff, but it's okay. There are some scenes where Erin talks about losing Torin and Pisces can't figure out where he is.
Dun dun.
And then Erin discovers that everybody stole her hamburger recipe, which is so sad.
Yeah, which, I mean... That is sad, and I'd feel bad, but at the same time, it's really not the most complicated recipe. I don't know what she's expecting.
I cannot tell you how long we spent on the episode where she goes into the city on a cart and starts selling the hamburgers, talking about how mayonnaise is not complicated. That pirate thought that it was revelatory. And I can't... First off, like, can you... Even I can make mayonnaise at home. It was so simple. And ketchup. And ketchup. And just so much of the recipes are so simple. I mean, they make sense from the perspective of what she's capable of making. And people haven't really considered this particular combination, because someone did eventually come up with it in our world and they made it a thing and people enjoyed it. But let me tell you, girl, hamburgers are not the height of anything.
It's not very revolutionary, no. So... Yeah, I mean, I feel for her. I feel for her, especially. She's so excited to have a whole bunch of people at her inn and get ready for a big crowd, and there's nobody there. But
there's nobody.
Yeah,
there.
I don't know what she's expecting when she brings a new creation and everyone gets so excited about it. And it's really just meat in a patty form. So,
I mean, it is the staple of the U.S., right? Meat in a patty form.
Mm-hmm.
I really want a hamburger now.
I had one yesterday.
Fuck you. God damn it. Erin does have a guest, though. Has a real guest. And it turns out it's a courier. This is the first... not the first time. This is Valsif. You remember Valsif?
Yeah.
Yeah, so the dude's been running from Selim. I'm supposed to say Selim. So, from Selim with Ryoka, but he outran her by, like, 400 million miles because he's got skills and she doesn't. And he walks into the inn and hands Erin the chessboard.
Well, isn't it not handed to her? It was going to hand to...
Yeah, you're right. It was supposed to be delivered to Olesum, but... No. The mail was... It was supposed to be delivered to whoever is the best chess player, right. And it ends up being Aaron. Aaron gets the board. So the chess board is, I'm so excited for the chess board. Because you know why.
Mm-hmm. Spoilers, but yeah.
We can't, you'll find out, and it's a lot of fun. And it's a mysterious chess board, but it doesn't have any pieces attached to it. It's.
But right now, everyone's like, huh, this is, okay, and she just throws it off to the side. Whatever.
Oh, I got some mail. Oh, it's a chess board. Cute. I put it away.
Yep.
Okay, and then Ryoka, of course, finally catches up after, exhausting herself and being...
walks in all stinky.
She's broken. Like, she could not keep up. And just a... I remember Dragonus saying this. It was like the perfect scene where poor Ryoka gets reminded once again that she's not the best in the world.
Not the best in the world, trying to compete with someone who's high level and has skills and everything like that. And she's like, oh, I couldn't do it. No kidding, you don't even have shoes.
Yep. There is... Oh, I forgot this part, but every pirate seems fascinated with the fact that the inn has glass windows. I was like, they're just glass. Is glass really that important?
I mean, wouldn't glass be, like, much more difficult to get back then? Though, I feel like the, because she got it from the Antinium, right?
Yeah, hold on. It's not the past. It's a different world. It's not like they can't make glass. It's just expensive.
Yeah, but it's the overall, like, technology level.
Oh, fine, I guess. So once everybody sits down and they catch up with each other and they talk about the chessboard and stuff, and eventually what happens is Ryoka asks Valsif to help her out because she thinks she's been magicked. Because she has a suspicion that her mind has been fucked with. And it turns out that she's right. And Valsif uses this really cool thing that looks like a dream catcher. I love the concept of dream catchers, by the way. You ever have one?
I didn't. My sister did, though. My old sister.
We made some when I was a little kid in like kindergarten or something. I have it somewhere in my house. I love dream catchers. I know there's a lot of significance. This is not no insult to those who are First Nation. But I just love the concept of it. It was so magical to me.
I mean, I thought they were cool. And my sister had a whole bunch of them. She'd hang them from like the ceiling and whatnot back in the day.
Yeah, this one explodes.
Yes, it does, right in her face.
And the last word that she hears in echoing in her mind is my favorite thing, dragon.
Dragons.
I guess that's the end of the chapter before I barrel into the next chapter because I want to talk about dragons. Pirate Appa's chapter note. So Pirate has established the pattern that they continue for the rest of their career up till today of having Patreon chapters be one chapter ahead of everybody. They talk about how they're setting it all up, and there is, they mentioned some kind of secret. Here's the secret. Check chapters 1.08R, 1.09R, and 2.24 odd dot dot things. Highlight some stuff, maybe. Then the ending of the chapter might make more sense. Let the speculation begin. Thanks for reading. What the fuck? Did you ever notice that there was something hidden in those chapters?
I don't think so. I think I started reading this on my phone, not on my computer or anything like that. And it's terrible on the phone. I don't know what else to say. It's the format, at least for mobile, was not great.
Let's be fair. There's two reasons the site's not really formatted for mobile. One is because Pirate can't do it by themselves. The other is that. And then the fact that I think it might be... like, they don't want you to read on the site that way. They want you to buy the book and, read the stuff. I mean, it's nice that they do it for free, but let's be real. It is what it is.
Yeah, it's what they do. How do they make a living? So, like...
Okay, all I can say, I went back and highlighted all of 1.08. I don't see anything. What secret stuff that we miss?
Maybe they changed it later.
Maybe. Okay, digging into the comments and to harp on Pirate about the mayo thing. So John, on April 22nd, 2017, expressed the same opinion I did and Dragonus did. Minor point, I've made homemade mayo before. So mayo is made by taking an egg yolk and beating in oil, essentially, to get an emulsion. Homemade mayo is going to be more yellowish because of this. Commercial mayo is white because they start with egg yolks, then add a ton of water, then do the emulsion. So much that the yellow from the egg yolk is basically diluted down to nothing. I didn't know this, did you?
Nope.
This is like revelatory to me. Is that
Read the comments.
honestly, it's kind of cool. I didn't know that mayo is white because they add a lot of water to it, but that makes sense, right?
Also, if you scroll down a bit more, someone commented what was in those chapters. If you didn't go back. So let's see here. Okay. All right. We got, was it Malnyan? April 22nd, 2017. For everyone too lazy to check the chapters she listed, there's a bunch of hidden messages in black font. Oh, that's right. That's right. That's what it was. Is the damn font changes or color changes.
Is that what
You would
happens?
just skip. Yeah, you'd have to. It would blend in with the background, so you didn't see it. It would just look like a space. But if you highlighted it, obviously, the text was there. Ah, that's right.
Wow. Pirate does this a lot as time goes on. They use little tricks and tips to like hide Easter eggs and give clues. I didn't notice. I never even noticed.
I think it's kind of cool, but at the same time, like, I feel like the you're gonna miss a lot of normal readers are probably gonna miss that stuff because like I'm not gonna highlight anything. I'm only gonna notice if someone else does, and then I like check the comments or something like that. I don't know, especially if I'm reading on my phone. I do a lot of like reading on my phone.
Wait a second. I think Pirate did edit it. Hold on, let me look this up.
All right, you look it up.
Oh my God! I just noticed. I Googled. I went back to the website and then did a search for dragon, and it's still blacked out. It's just there if I highlight it. I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, so I'm assuming that's her like memory, like that's a loss or whatever. The stuff
Yeah.
that's blacked out.
We won't say what the lines are and let you guys discover it, but go back to the chapters, look for just put dragon into those chapters, control F, and you'll find it. It's great. It's cool. How did I not notice this the first time I read through?
Probably because it was black text and you didn't think of it.
Angus Mayfield also set speculates on what the chessboard could be and says, "So who else thinks the chessboard is a QEC style thing that lets two distant people play chess together? Feels pretty obvious, but I'm crappy at calling things, so I might be completely wrong. I hope Aaron wrecks them, though it'd be interesting if they started playing a famous game from Earth, one that Aaron would know." And she replies the same way that happened in that game, because that would be so spoopy. What the fuck? Also, wow, the Dreamcatcher exploded. That's a bit awkward for Val. Tier 6, 7 magic? Holy crap. I wonder if that's even his maximum. Probably not. I wonder how Ryoko is going to react to this reveal. I mean, dude noticed a bunch of shit. Got some clues.
He's does better than I do at recognizing those things at times.
I don't. What does QEC mean?
I do not know.
I mean, all if I Google it, it's just quality environmental containers.
I don't think that's the answer.
I could be. It could be. Or it could be quantum error correction.
I
I
don't
don't know.
think that's the answer either.
You're no help. Talk about 217. Go.
Okay, I mean, so 217 starts off as I think Ryoka's just like getting the memories. What I don't want to say like, she uncovers them again, or they get thrust back into her head. I don't know how to describe it, but yeah, a bunch of memories suddenly back in her head, and it basically overwhelms her.
The memories are doozies because I have not. I think that was the chapter where I laughed for a full minute as I was reading through it. Like, my grin did not stop the whole time.
Yeah, well, you have a thing for dragons, so.
Okay, it wasn't just a dragon thing, but honestly, when you read the chapter, Teriark acts like such a doofus the whole fucking time. He goes up to her and is like, "I'm a dragon. No,
I
I'm not
mean,
a dragon. I'm an old man. No, I'm not an old man. I'm a fucking."
she's just a lowly human. What does she know? He's a mighty powerful dragon. He doesn't need to try to hide these things.
Except that he has to.
But yeah, I mean, it's all just all our different types of memories that come back.
What's even better, I'm sorry, I've been giggling for a little bit. What's even better about this whole situation is that Ryoka is so stubborn and so bent on not being like controlled. She's such a rebel. Mostly she's so fucked up in the head that Tarek spells work, but she still fucks with him. Like when he asks her, "Where are you from?" She tells her from far, like, what was it, Ohio? No. What did she say?
I'd have
Hold
to
on.
look for the specific passage. Oh, by search Oshi.
Not where she's from, but where he asks her, what's happening in the world? And she says, I don't watch the news.
That's fair. I'm as that's a perfectly good response. She's a little I'm blanking on the word now. Smartass, there we go.
Yeah, she's a smartass even when she's being ensorcelled and told to tell the truth and be all that stuff.
Classic Ryoka, honestly.
This is the classic part of the exchange. Tarek literally goes, I wish to know of any ongoing major wars between multiple nations, new technologies, or spells developed, legendary monsters sighted or slain, import of that nature. Tell me all the news you have heard of in the past several years or so. What has transpired while I have been secluded here? She shrugs and goes, don't know.
I mean, she doesn't. I mean, that's perfectly fine. But yeah, she could probably take a hint that there's a, I don't know, a dragon in front of her and reel it in back.
No, she's ensorcelled, right? She can't really think straight because he's got her under a spell. But yeah, she is what she is. There is one part the dragoness mentioned when we recorded this last time about how poor Ryoka gets proven that she's lame all over again, because remember the stink potion was to keep her safe, and she runs all the way into the Highlands and she thinks that's how she got there. But that's not what happened. She figures out that when she passed through the Highlands, this is where the creepiness comes in. Some kind of weird creature with tiny pupils came out of there and tried to eat her, and it was naked, and it was vaguely human and had a head and torso, and it was so fucking weird, and Teriark had to come out and try to kill it in order.
Yeah, d doesn't he just like tell it to go away or something like that?
He doesn't tell it. He like flies out, and I mean that's how she sees him for the first time. I mean, how cool would it be to see a dragon in
I think
flight?
I'd piss my pants, Oshi, I'll be honest. I don't think the first thing I would think of is like, wow, that's cool. I'd be like, oh, Jesus.
Okay, fine. Maybe I have a dragon fetish.
Hey, you know, if you see the first thing you see is like the humanoid form of dragon, that's one thing, Oshi. I can see that. If you know the first thing I see is a dragon flying out to attack this other thing, well, I'd probably be grateful for not dying to one thing, but then I'd be like, oh my God, it's a giant dragon.
Yeah, so she comes out of her memories and she's like figuring shit up. And then they introduce another courier because they were talking about different people who are couriers. There's a hawk.
Oh yeah, Hawk. I forgot about that guy.
Yeah, I mean, hawk was introduced before in the hamburger episode. What am I calling it episodes? But really, it feels like an episode sometimes. In the hamburger cart chapter where he comes by to eat some hamburgers, Dragonus thought that Eren has a furry fetish and she likes. He couldn't figure out if it was a furry fetish or if he thought it was just cute.
They're fluffy, man. Come on. Look, you see a bunny and you kind of just want to pat its head. If you saw a giant one, I'd fluff.
Yeah, and then they go. I mean, it's a pretty slice of life each chapter. They go into the city, people have baths. Ryoka convinces them to cast repair. Okay, it starts off slow after that. And Ryoka convinces Pisces. What was it Pisces? Yeah. To cast repair on her iPhone again. And then it becomes probably one of my favorite chapters of the second volume ever, because this is the party. This is the not the first party that Pirate ever did, but the biggest one that kind of starts the tradition up. Eren gets the phone, convinces them to turn the phone into a giant speakers and starts singing.
Yeah, use magic to make a big old concert.
To bass boost all her sound.
Yeah,
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 that's it.
yeah,
And she goes like, hey, it's music time. Let's start with a classic.
Let's start with the classic. Nobody knows it except for the two there. Yeah, no, I thought it was interesting because you kind of saw where it was going at the start when I think in the in town, she's like trying to listen to music. Ryoko's trying to listen to music, and then everyone's nodding their head along. So I think at that point, it's kind of like, oh, yeah, well, I can kind of see where like this is going. Get the repair, and then yeah, the big concert. Everyone's listening to different songs. I think it was it was fun. You know, it's not something you would have expected to see, just a big concert. Erin finally got her big crowd that she wanted, and I think it was something that she needed as well, just to kind of like let loose. You know, get the feeling of home, feeling a bit better about that, because it's something that comes up a couple times later too. I can say more than a couple times, but
right, it gives you a sense of it gives you a sense of the emotion that Erin is feeling, that she was so excited to feel even a little bit of home. Plus, on the more practical level, she gets to level up because she finally does stuff that has to deal with the inn. Like, she gets guests in, she holds the party, Olesum turns into her manager. He, like, gets into town, gets supplies, and Relk and Kilvakich, like, roll barrels of, what was it, barrels or ale, or kegs or whatever the fuck it is, up to the town. And they have it's a kegger. Let's be real, it's a giant kegger.
You put a bunch of giant dogs and lizards.
Ugh, come on, that's so specious.
that's true, fair. It's a smelly mosh pit is what it is.
Yeah, it's a smelly mosh pit. But the thing that super impressed me the most about this party, and it's sort of a hint to where Pirate might be taking Erin, is that the Fae attend.
Do they? I don't remember that part.
This is the chapter where, after she starts singing, she even convinces the Fae, the people who come from another world, to come into the air and to dance with everybody. Erin invites the Fae, everybody, but including the Fae, to come and dance and to be part of our party, and they take her up on it.
Yeah, that is, I guess that is kind of a start of their connection with the...
Or is making with everybody. Like, she's such a good...
Erin makes connections with everybody, so I guess that's an easy way to say it.
Erin makes connections with everybody, and including the Fae, who are, like, such... I don't know, they're just so ethereal at this point. And they were so weird when they were introduced, right? They cursed... They were assholes to everybody, and here they're just singing and dancing.
Having a good time.
And they throw a mug into the crowd.
I wouldn't be a party without doing that.
Apparently the night ends on everybody singing All the Single Ladies.
Classic way to end everything. I don't know. I think it was just a fun part that she needed. Just, I don't know, just to feel better about everything. She has it. She's been having it rough. You know, a little bit of home, some fun where she can just... Because I think she made everyone else was working in the inn when she was just singing, having a good time.
For once, yeah. I liked also that there was a small mention of the reality of what it happens at these big parties. I think one of the lines was, and then she saw a few rings disappear and people start slipping off in pairs as the night progressed. The first mention of the fact that people have sex. And that parties are where you make out in the dark.
Is this really the first mention?
I mean, it's not the first mention of, you know, sexuality and stuff like that. But it's like an acknowledgement that it exists.
Yeah. Okay, I can see that.
And I remember how people always bitch and moan that there was no sex in the story for like forever and ever.
Okay, I don't know about that. Maybe it's because I binge read it, didn't read any comments or anything like that. So it didn't take me too long to... initially come up to this point, but
everybody goes to sleep and Ryoko dreams about dragons and Erin gets to level up and
she about dragons.
Because I would dream about dragons. Erin finally levels up to 21 and she gets advanced cooking and advanced crafting, and she gains two really important skills, like one really important skill in addition to that, which is skill perfect recall.
Well, she also got the singer class.
Yeah, she got the singer class, which is kind of cool, because if classes, like you were saying with the queen thing, is all about perception, then she actually sees herself as somebody who sings, right?
I think what I was saying about that before was just the perception on what the classes are, as opposed to understanding that, like, that's what she is, just... like the structure, but yeah, that's another point, whatever.
And then the chapter ends on the what I consider one of the most perfect notes. The chessboard fills out with ghostly chess pieces, and one of them moves pawn to e4, and Aaron just says, "Whoa."
Yeah, I love endings like that. Something just crazy happens, and then it ends. That's not necessarily crazy, but like something really interesting happens. Like that's pretty much, whoa, sums it up perfectly. You can't do anything but like smile at the end of the chapter.
And that's what TWI did for a long, long time. It still does today. It just makes me, well, maybe not smile. Sometimes this chapter's but I still do end up feeling good afterwards, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like having a really complex meal or something. So, Pirate Abba's author notes. More talk about the Patreon and setting it up. And this is the first mention of Pirate publishing the first clown chapter.
The clown chapters.
It doesn't come up right away because it's a Patreon thing, so we won't cover it for a little while. But I think we're going to do like all the clown chapters in one go because it is like one connected story. It's a really... I think it's controversial, actually.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. Because I know when I first read it, I did not know how well connected the story is, or how big the world is, or where they are. I read a lot of these things as a one-off. Like, I thought it was just like, and here's a random like side character, which it definitely could have been. Maybe, you know, that kind of thing. You could definitely see that. Because, I mean, that comes up in a lot of like other like web novels and everything. You get like one random person that has like a different perspective on what the main character is doing, and they're not necessarily crucial to the story, or maybe they don't come up again. But so I was like, oh well, this is kind of cool, but I know it was interesting seeing a different perspective. I guess definitely can see where it's controversial though.
Yeah, we'll get to it though. If you want to come by, we'll add you to the schedule for the clown chapters. But and then they end on talking about something. It's been an incredible 2 weeks, and the amount pledged on Patreon has ... tripled from what it was. I'm incredibly grateful, and I will try to write to my utmost to meet expectations. You did, Pirate. Happy joy, joy.
Good job.
You have tons and thousands and thousands of people who are Patreons. In between playing Dragon Age Inquisition, I bought the game right when it came out, but it was so disappointing I left it until now, and now I find myself playing Dragon Age Origins instead. Waste of $50. Did you ever play Inquisition?
I haven't played any of those games. I think I have them, though.
You have everything! You just never play them!
I think it's sitting in my Epic's game. We talked about this last night. It's sitting in my Epic Games account, along with my other, like, 200 other games that I've never played.
I hate you so much because I only buy a game if I play it a lot. And then it's like I have 20 or 30 games, but I have thousands of hours played on every single one of them. Meanwhile, this motherfucker has like 300 games. He's played like two of them for 10 hours.
Come on. Epic is different because Epic gives out the games for free. I'm not just buying games just to buy games.
Okay, open up your Steam library and tell me how many hours you played.
Hey, there's a lot of games in my Steam library, but they came from bundles. Yeah, but I do have a lot of backlog that I've never actually played. I'm like, eh, maybe I'll play this. Or you play like an hour or two and then just never come back to it.
We spent, like, in the last 3 weeks, whenever I drop in, there have been three separate conversations where... what are we going to play? And then you guys go through a list of your fucking libraries and you make me depressed.
Well, not everyone has the same game. That's the hard part, is finding a game that everyone has and everyone wants to play. It's a balance, Oshi. It's a balance.
The famous typo thread is also started here. I think it was started a little bit earlier than that, but a bunch of people helped out Pirate with typos. Thank you so much. It's a free service that you provide.
Those excellent people in the comments. Good job, everybody. Round of applause to you.
All right. So Aaron Martinez says, one thing I think this story does much better than all the others on Top Web Fiction is moments of psychological healing. Times like when she played the chess game with Pawn after Kilbukic died, 1.27, or the time when she sang after Kissimber had a go at Pawn, 1.38. I realize this impromptu music festival isn't quite as potent as those two times, but it's good to see the city residents having something positive after being hit by ruins, Skinner-led undead, Ghazi, and Winter all in a row. I mean, that's exactly what you were saying. Like, this is a moment of breathing room where people are just recovering, and Erin invites everyone to join her in healing, right?
Yeah, I think it's one of those important things that steps away from a lot of the typical, fantasy web fictions out there, largely because, like, if it was like a normal one, you wouldn't have the moment of healing or the reprieve. You might have like a little bit of something, but I feel like Wandering In focuses a lot on the slice of life compared to the action. Whereas if it was the other way around, it'd be a typical series would have a ton of action, just going from one thing to the next, to the next, to the next, to the next. And it never really feels like you're doing that in the Wandering In, at least in my opinion, which isn't a bad thing. I think it works out really well. But you still get that tension where you feel like you need this this moment of reprieve just for the, you know, help the viewers relax, help Erin relax. Character driven, I guess, is the good way to put it.
Yep. And Majory, I think that was the person that commented in the last chapter talking about predicting the chess set, says, "I called the chess set." Hey. Yep, you did. You did, Majory. I've forgotten this part, but multiple people says this. Erin leveled 6 times from where she was. She was level 15 in Q. Yeah.
Did she really? Well, I mean, it also kind of makes sense, but they don't really go into detail how the leveling system works, so.
Yeah, I mean, you don't realize just the significance of it, but the fact, I still say it's the Fae. I still say the fact that she got the Fae to dance at her party is why she leveled 6 times.
Oh, I'm sure that played a huge part in it. Because didn't we mention this at the start of this episode where, like, we talked about either with the game dev class or gamifying things and how trying to quantify how you get, like, experience level up? I feel like it's one of those things where they, I don't want to say they're, like, a high-level mob that she dealt with, but a unique situation where they're creatures of, like you said, high significance. So it's important that she, you know, please them or involve them or something like that. So I think you're onto something there, Oshi.
That was 2.17, 17th chapter of volume 2. Yay, we are done for the day. Thank you so much, Dylan, for coming on and talking to us all about this. But before we go, we've made a commitment in the last few episodes to ask our readers a question so that they have a topic to discuss or email us about. What do you think we should discuss? Do you have a question that you might want to ask the readership before we go?
Okay, so if you were the one putting on the concert, what would have been the ending song?
Oh, that's a good one. I was going to talk about the music, but I feel like it's mean to talk about pirates' music choices.
These are Erin's music choices, okay? Or Ryoka's, I guess, with her catalog of songs.
Of random Disney music and like pop music. I'm really surprised her list wasn't filled with like electro pop and weird EDM music.
It's all over the place instead.
Wait a second. You're a runner. What kind of music do you play when you run? I know you run with music on.
Actually, I don't. I don't do too much running anymore, but even when I was running every single day, I actually didn't really listen to music at all. Which is, I guess, more surprising than what I would think. But yeah, apparently everyone listens to music while they run. And I mean, I would sometimes, but yeah, I started running like middle school, high school, and we never were able to like run with our music or phones or whatever at the time. I mean, not that you would, because phones weren't like they are now. I guess you'd have like your iPod or something like that, or like the clip it onto you. But yeah, no, I never did any sort of music listening while I was running. Sometimes maybe I was on the treadmill or something like that, and at that point I'd probably have, like you said, some like, I don't know, electronic type music that's a bit faster. But yeah, no, I was always just running my own head, never used music.
Here's the answer to the class question. It's not going to be game developer or paladin. You're going to be a runner.
You know, I always thought about that, mainly because, like, there's so many cool, like, skills and abilities, and, oh, God, it would be so freeing. I would totally be like Ryoka, minus the barefoot. I would not want to run around barefoot, but...
Thanks for listening, everybody. This has been No Killing Goblins. We're out. Say bye, Dylan.
Adios, everybody.
You've been listening to No Killing Goblins.
The music on No Killing Goblins was composed by System Glitch. They can be found at youtube.com/systemglitch.
You can get in touch with us via our Twitter at No Killing Goblin, or email us at nokillinggoblins with an S at gmail.com.